Hey, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the new media show. My name is Todd Cochran and got a lively bunch on here very early this morning. And I want to welcome my two guests. Rob is once again out this week, so I'm running solo, but I've got two very capable co-hosts on that we're going to talk about a variety of topics. I'm getting some feedback from somebody. I'm getting Skype feedback bad. Hey, Don, I think it's yours.
You're back. I lost you there.
Yeah, your audio is pumping. Something's going on your side. The feedback was coming on my
side?
Yeah. So anyway, I want to welcome Jamie Davis, the pod medic from medicast.com. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks for having me on the show. I think I was on here once before, but I'm an avid viewer of the show, and it's great to be here talking about new media topics.
Well, I was very, very careful today because I wanted to make sure that I brought two folks on that were, there went Don. What happened? Wait, hang on a second. Ah. Drives me crazy. It seems anybody watches the show, that's just a regular occurrence. I wanted to bring some folks on that we're going to, you know, had some experience with doing new media trade shows. And both you and Don had, of course, on the bottom square is Don Bain, the gadget professor. Don, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everybody.
And I think your Skype is feeding back.
Okay, let's reduce that.
I think that's better. That's where it was coming from. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Yeah, oftentimes, if you're on a really good mic, what will happen is the speaker will go right in, and it just builds this vicious cyclone of sound. But I'll tell you, it's been a interesting week here. We're for those of you that aren't familiar, every year we go with a team of folks to the Consumer Electronics Show, and of content creators, and we take these folks out of their studios, and we transition to a studio at a convention center where we cover a big event, and we'll get into some of the reasons why we do that, and also some of the challenges of doing one of these events. But I wanted to just kind of give some folks that are content creators, you know, some additional ideas on how to really promote your show and how to get some additional exposure that you may not. I think I'll start off with Jamie and ask you, you have decided to do a variety of trade shows that are very, very specific to your content. I guess the first question for you is why, and probably the answer is obvious, but why don't you go into your reasons why you did it and some of the benefits of stepping out of the studio and going into the community or going into a trade event?
Well, I think there's two reasons to do it. First reason, I think, is to put yourself in front of your viewers, and it's a great opportunity to meet your audience and find them, give them an opportunity to come and meet you. So that's the first and most important reason from my standpoint as a content creator. But as the managing director of a network of healthcare related programs that I partner with you, Todd, and Raw Voice with, the ProMed Network, the second most important reason is that it puts me in front of the vendors in my industry, the different companies that are all making products, providing services, and those people are the ones that are, really helping to fund these events. And so I've been doing it for about five and a half years now, and starting 3 years ago, I started getting it all paid for by selling sponsorships for our conference coverage. And if as a content creator, there are ways to get out there and cover these types of events. I don't care what your niche is. there is probably some kind of convention for your niche. And if you maybe have already attended it or have thought about attending it, you should get in contact with them and see if they'd be allow you some space to come and do some live podcasting or at least live to recorded podcasting. And that's why we do it. And we've been very successful in the nursing space and the emergency medical services, paramedics and EMTs, and working with some of my podcasters to get into some of the physicians conferences next. So it's been a exciting road.
But with that comes with a major commitment as well, I'm sure. And, you know, I can talk about my experience, but I'd rather talk about yours. In that, you know, you have to, make the connection with the trade show. You have to either buy space or, if you're lucky, get space donated. Location as well as where they put you if you get donated space, because their floor space is quite a premium. What are some of the things that you've run into with the trade shows actually? Letting you in.
Well, and I've run into all kinds of different issues. I do right now four primary trade shows a year. One of them actually pays me to come in, and because they want to use my audience, they want to get the word out about what I do with my audience. And so that's, but that didn't happen until I'd been doing other trade shows for a while. So that's not something you're likely to find up front, but because we were a proven product to somebody, I was actually approached by an organization to come and cover their trade show. But up to that point, you really need to have a handle on exactly what you want to do. I would say start simple. So don't try to do video right away. Our first two and a half years, we did audio only and didn't start doing video until about 3 years ago. So they were happy with us just recording audio programming. One of the trade shows donates us space, but requires us to buy the furnishings for that space and then have a revenue split with them. Another trade show, has us come in, pays us a very small amount, but covers our travel expenses. We pretty much break even on that one. But again, because it's an opportunity for me to invest that time and energy into getting in front of my audience and getting in front of potential advertisers for my audience, it's a win-win from that standpoint.
Don, you've been with us, what will this be, year three for this upcoming right. CES? So for you, and let's just take, And your business side, let's talk about just strictly your content side. Going to the show as the gadget professor to a show like CES, I would only imagine that has opened the floodgates for the amount of stuff you're able to get for the show to review, hasn't it?
Unquestionably. And every year when I go to CES, one of the first things I do after I check into the hotel is give you my credit cards and wallet to hold. There are, it's like a kid in a candy shop there. There's so many things that are out, and it gives me the exposure, not only professionally to be on the air, but also more importantly, it gives me the knowledge of what's coming up technologically, and it's quite an amazing experience. And also, we get a lot of people who are acquainted, believe it or not, with the Gadget Professor, and would love to be on the show. So it actually feeds us content and information showing the new products. And then after CES, we're contacted by quite a few people, and they'll send us some things to evaluate, and some work, some don't. And that's really how I stay, I guess, with it, if you will, by going to CES. It's an absolute must for me, and I enjoy it. It's a lot of work, as you know. But it pays off big dividends. And then also, some of the business contacts that you make. If you're sitting in your office, you're not going to meet anybody. So the trade shows give you an opportunity to meet people, to meet new technology, and to establish a rapport with these people so that you have access to questions and answers. And I've had several situations where there have actually been products that I've reviewed that I've liked, and some fans have had some issues with them, and I'm able to call, you know, the top people and say, hey, look, this is a problem with A, B, and C, and they'll pick the phone up and they'll straighten it out. So that's also helpful too, so you could stand behind what it is that you're reviewing or recommending.
You know, one of the things that when we first started going, and you know, I almost have to look back at the advertising media kit that we put together. I think this is year 8. That we're going to be, it's something, 7th or 8th. I don't know. I'm kind of lost track. You know, I've only been doing the show for 9 years, so probably 8 years. So, you know, when we first went, we were an oddity. You know, we were not the content creators like us were not going to big events like this. They were, you know, the folks that were going were the ABCs, NBCs, the CNETs, the big, and they're still there. You know, they're walking around with the big cameras and, you know, with the 4 or 5 people of an entourage with a sound guy. And, you know, here it was just specifically Andy McCaskey and myself that as we started out with this too, it's just covering audio and we're walking around with a mic and doing interviews. And it was exciting. It was fun. But we also understood that the event was a visual event and came back the following year with our first HDV camera and, did 30 hours of tape, and it was when it was still tape, not digital. So, you know, from that perspective, we learned a lot and over time have built up, some exposure. Now, I think our real realization that this could be something much bigger was when we were invited. And of course, at the time, NBC Universal was, had a big, I mean, multi-million dollar broadcast booth on the show floor at CES, and so their challenge was to try to cover basically 40 or 50 hours of content, and they had to be live that entire time on not only the web but their secondary channels that they were pushing out. Don, I'm getting feedback from you again, wherever it's coming.
Well, I'm losing your audio there, Todd.
Yeah, I wonder if your Skype is set to auto adjust on the preferences, but the, really kind of, made us realize is NBC Universal extended an olive branch and said, you know, we want you guys to put on a show. And we got an hour and we ran 5 guests, on and off the stage, over an hour. And it was a hit. It did great. And they invited us back and we did incredible numbers. And we started to think at that point that this was something where we needed to have our own studio. And making the step or making the jump from walking around and just covering the show to actually having a 10 by 10 or 10 by 20 booth was quite the jump. And in our instance, CEA... I really didn't know. They hadn't seen our content from years before, our walking content. And, you know, we'd had to, you know, camera crews and we, you know, believe me, we covered the show. They put us in the South Hall, upper floor, all the way to the back and said, this is where you're going to be. And we'll see how it goes. And that's where we were for 2 years. And the reason we were back there for 2 years, it wasn't because, it was because CEA wanted to make sure that we weren't going to embarrass them.
Well, you know, the other thing too, that simultaneously was happening as time, you know, you said you've been doing it for 8 years is that, you know, podcasting, really through people like yourself has come into its own. As you said, when it first started off, people were scared. They didn't know what it was. They didn't want to embarrass themselves, so to speak. But the truth of the matter is there's been, a gigantic paradigm shift in the way the media is consumed. And certainly podcasting is at the forefront of this. And, I mean, certainly if you look at what Jamie does with just, you know, concentrating on medical shows, it just shows you that there's a thirst for knowledge out there. And with the advance of technology being smaller, cheaper, faster, better, you're looking at the high def cameras about this big now and putting out great signals. So podcasting essentially has come into its own and it's just the perfect vehicle, I think, for doing live coverage at these trade shows, and the audience is specific. It's a targeted audience, and only people who are interested in that information, who are potential buyers of those products, are going to watch that. So it's a great fit. It's live. It's spontaneous, and I think it brings a lot of added value, as is evidenced by the hundreds of people at this point who are walking around CES with a microphone and a recorder.
Jamie, on the, you know, from your side, you know, you're basically producing and getting prepared to go to one of these events. You can't do this by yourself. This is not a one-man show. So how, you know, explain to the audience how you basically recruited other content creators to go to the show with you.
Well, I found the people in my niche that were creating high quality content and were doing it on a regular basis, so that there was a certain level of professionalism that was going on there, because I was putting myself out there, my reputation, and saying I could sell them this bill of goods, and that we were going to come out there and produce high quality content. We were going to be professional. We were going to be a plus for their show. And so I had to find the right people to do that. And I put together a core group of about four people that were able to come in, and we were able to pool our resources. But a lot of it was, you know, me coming up with the materials and the funding, kind of like what you do, Todd, is, you know, providing the bulk of the technical equipment and know-how and knowledge to do it, and then bringing together a core group of people to help assemble it, to help operate it during the conference, and to provide hosts for the different segments in the content production. And that's what I've done. But it really starts with finding those people in your niche. You know, it's funny. People will say, well, we're competitors, you know, the other podcasters that I have on our conference shows. And I explain to them, we're not competitors. We have similar content. We talk about similar things, but we are very much friends and supporters of each other's programming. And I think that you may find that, you know, that person that is, you think is, might be your biggest competitor, might become your biggest asset for putting on something like one of these shows.
And I think a lot of people too, in the challenge I had, well, not necessarily a challenge, you know, for the first couple of years, it was Andy and myself, and then Jeffrey joined the crew, and then we started getting, like, you know, little by little the team grew, and I think last year we had 20 people at CES, and some of them are talent, some of those are support folks, you know, and we really you know, really work hard to bring our, you know, our community to support us as well. So, you know, doing one of these events is not necessarily a small undertaking. Now, what we do at CES at this point has grown into it's quite a monster. But the, you know, I think the important thing that you said in the beginning, Jamie, was if someone's going to do this, to start small and then work up into it, because, you know, you don't want to do what we do the very, very, very first year, you know, because it's probably not going to end up being very successful. You have to learn how to cover these events. And, you know, for example, the majority of our planning, we've done enough times, we've been able to shorten the planning period, but, you know, we were planning as much as 6 months out, mm-hmm. Starting meetings in like July for a January show. And this year we've narrowed that down. We started planning in late September. And you know, we feel, you know, at this point, it's just to me, it's routine. But if someone doing this first time, they get pretty overwhelmed, wouldn't you think?
Well, and I think, like you said, Todd, it's start out the way you and Andy did, which is get yourself a digital recorder, get yourself a handheld microphone. If you're going to invest in anything, invest in a mic flag with your logo on it, yep. Because it makes you look a lot more professional, just like that. And you can do a lot just by recording an audio program. And so go to the conference the first year and just walk around and do interviews, man on the street interviews, interviews people in a different booth. If you can, try to interview one of the organizers. It's one of the secrets that somebody told me a long time ago when I first started out in media production, right out of college 30 years ago when I first started, was He was an old independent director, producer that did a lot of work for Discovery Channel back in the early days. And he said the way to be successful in independent video was to find a way to interview the president or the vice president of marketing or somebody high up in the chain of command and make them look or sound good. And if you do that, they remember that. They have an ego and they will want to have you back on to interview them again. And that's how you build a presence for yourself. But it can start small. And I think that like what you did with you and Andy did, it's a perfect example of how to cover one of these conferences in the beginning, just by walking around and doing those interviews. Get permission that you can do interviews on the floor and then go in there and do it.
You know, In past years during my 24-hour podcast that I do, we've taken quite a bit of time to explain the entire process, and we won't be able to get through all that today during the show. But, you know, one thing that you have to do, and Don, I know you probably now have a list of gear that you're going to take, and, you know, you kind of have like a checklist. So, you know, what are some of the things that you do, Don, to prep for a show like CES? And some things you learn just by going, but what are some of your preps you do?
Well, I've been doing this a long time, a real long time. Not only, my business is essentially production, and we do have a double checklist where one is just getting the equipment together and laying it out on the floor and checking it off. And then what I do, because I've been burned so many times with not having batteries, having stuff packed and getting to the facility and not having it work. So we put everything on the floor, and then one by one, we actually test it out. We make sure that we have two extra sets of batteries or power packs, make sure that we have the right cords. I can't tell you how many times, cords look similar, but they don't work. So we actually throw stuff on the floor, check it off, and then one by one, we take each piece of equipment. We actually test it out, make sure the backup batteries, cords are there, and then we pack it. And then I have a third checkoff list. I know this sounds crazy, but this is what we do when it's actually packed and we have certain foam that we've carved out to put the stuff in so it doesn't get rattled or shake. We have suitcases, different types of casings that we actually put everything in. I know from a diagram that we did what goes in what case. So when I get to a facility, I know where everything is. I know the audio's in the red case, the video's in the blue case. I have extra wires, power, battery stuff in another case. So I can very quickly pull out what I have. I know it's been packed. I know it's there. I know it's checked off. I know where it is. And I know that all the backup equipment is ready and available, and everything works. And that is real critical because, as you know, we bring a ton of gear, not myself, but you, and have to coordinate this all. So if one piece is broken and you're in the middle of setting up, it can really really put a fly in the ointment, if you will. So you have to be extremely thorough. And then we also have things where we take notes of things that just didn't perform. They work, but they just didn't perform well. And, you've got to find something else or not use it or find a workaround. And you really have to be aware of that because it's tough enough getting there. It's tough enough, you know, like Jamie said, you're going to go to that place where you have the interview with the VP or the president, and you're ready to make them look good, and you click on the camera and, it doesn't work. So there's a lot of prep.
And they remember that too.
Yes, they do.
You know, I 2 years ago, 19 or 20 boxes shipped by UPS. everything was, we got all down, everything was set up, and I had one cable that we forgot to pack.
You know, I remember that.
And no one in town had that specific cable.
It was a Panasonic or a Sony cable.
It was a Sony cable, yeah. And what ended up happening was I went to the Sony store, and I was to the point where I was going to buy another one of these $8,000 cameras just for the cable, and then figure out a way how I could take this thing back. But the guys at the Sony store were nice enough. They took the cable out of the pack, out of the box, and said, bring it back to us at the end of the show. And I could have kissed those guys. I really could, because that would have been one less camera. So, you know, now for me, it's like I get so wrapped around my garage becomes my staging area. This year's a little more tricky because half the gear is in the mainland already. We left it in the mainland. We didn't ship it back. But what we did do is I went to Michigan where all that gear's at, and about 2 months ago, and we made sure everything made it there fine. I spread it all out, sure, and redid the inventories because when you're wrapping up an event, you're just piling stuff in, you know, and it's hard to remember where what's where because your hair is really on fire. But I think, you know, this pre-planning is absolutely the most critical thing you can do in prepping for an event. The events are the fun and easy part in my, well, to a certain extent, are the fun and easy part.
I don't know if there is an easy part. You're so used to doing this, it's second nature. In fact, what we've done in certain situations is after we've hooked everything up, I've actually taken digital photos of how I've hooked things up because, you know, as you know, sometimes you try something and it doesn't work and you got to try a different way and that works. So rather than writing it, I just take a picture of it now and I throw it in the box so I can go back and say, and I date the picture, obviously, and say, oh, this is what we did. We fed the mic in this way. We took the ox out, whatever it is. So,
and, you know, and generally you're under an extreme amount of pressure. You're under time crunch. You are tired because you maybe have traveled multiple time zones. And it just ends up your brain basically can go into vapor lock. And I was close to that last year. So, you know, again, we came back and we had some lessons learned and some stuff that we're not going to do this year. But, you know, the next thing is really getting those guests scheduled. So, you know, you've made the decision, you're going to go. And maybe that first year, you're just walking around, you're meeting people. How have you built your contact list then, Jamie, from show to show? Do you reach out to a lot of the same vendors, or are you trying to bring new mixes in? What do you find is your from year to year?
If it's your first time, I think the best thing you can do if it's your first event to go to is to go to the website for the conference or event or whatever it is. There's generally an exhibitor list. It's usually alphabetical. I just start on that list and I start hitting those. You know, that's how you start. If you're going to if you're going for the first time and you don't have any relationships, is contact all those companies on that list and say, hey, we're going to be there with a crew, a camera crew, or maybe we're going to be there for our audio program and we'd like to interview somebody in your booth about what's coming up. After you've done that the first time and you've made some of those contacts, then you can start going back to the ones that worked out really well, that treated you really well. And so I have a core group of vendors I make sure I hit at every conference because they are the ones that are paying the bills. They are the ones that treat you right when you're there. And, you know, if you're getting sponsorships, they're your sponsors. Or they're just products and people that you've made friends with and you want to support them. There's a lot of small businesses that go to conferences like this to sell a new and innovative product they've come up with. And, you know, I, as a small business person myself, I love to do things to support other small business people. But that's kind of where it starts, is going out there and building those relationships. And it may start with just a cold, you know, email or, you know, filling out the contact part of somebody's webpage and say, hey, I want to do an interview with you. I see you're going to this upcoming event. I have an opening on Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. Can I come by your booth? And that's how it starts. It really is that simple. And you fill your schedule up as best you can. Eventually, you get to do something like what Todd does at CES, and it becomes a completely different level where you really need support people to help out with that, and basically a producer on the scene to get people checked in and find out who's next. But it can start off very simply to just take that one microphone and just yourself and a digital recorder and set up a few set up one an hour, let's say, and that gives you time to walk around and pick up a few more as you're walking around. But you can do a 2 or 3 day conference with having maybe 10 or 12 interviews pre-scheduled.
For, you know, what we've done in the past couple of years, we actually have a vendor contacts us. They know, you know, basically know, first of all, we do a mailing, let them know we're going to be at the show. Then starting usually, well, I got my first request here about a week ago. People are already booking and it's, you know, it's 3 months out. So we send them to a form, and basically we made this form online where they tell me a lot of information, and we agree to NDAs if there's a embargo on announcements. We agree to that right within the form, and they basically fill everything out and then request three different spots, and we try to slot them in at their preferred time. But the, you know, that is the booking part for us, because we're doing 40 hours and we're on 10-minute spacings where, you know, a new guest is at 7 to 8 minutes is getting kicked out of the chair and the next guest is coming in, gets pretty busy. And we have, you know, it's you know, and if you're first starting out, I don't encourage you to go on 7-minute or 10-minute turns, because you have to have someone that's, you know, running what I call the green room, and more. And it's just a greeter, and they're basically doing a little 1-minute prep with them and getting them ready to sit down. And it can be pretty it's even for the host. You're like, who's up next? But, you know, and also another thing to think about is how many hours you're going to do. And, you know, number of hours you do requires, you know, the more hours, the more people, right? Because you can't be on air for 8 hours straight. So what is your rule of thumb, Jamie, for the amount of time that you guys are on the air, or how much time are you live?
Well, let's make sure I'm turned on here, because I've been muting in between. You have to make sure that you've got enough people to cover the event. You really can't do it yourself if you're going to do some kind of live streaming or something like that. Now, we don't stream live. We actually record live to tape. And then, so we have multiple cameras and we switch it on scene, but we record live to a digital recorder, actually several digital recorders, because backup, backup, backup is the mantra. But we generally, I let the people run their own programming, and we schedule them. So we're open and running whenever the exhibit hall is open and running, because we're generally inside the exhibit hall in one of the slots. And so when the exhibit hall is open, we're running our show, and we'll have, in our situation, we don't actually run them in and out as fast as you do, Todd. What we like to do is put people, so I might do a topic and talk to somebody for 20 minutes, and then we spend 5 or 10 minutes switching in a new set of guests, and I'll talk to them. So every show gets an hour of time in which they can talk for 45 or 50 minutes, or they can talk for 2 20-minute slots or 4 10-minute slots, or however they want to break it down, so that everybody gets about 50 minutes an hour of programming time. And we set that up on the schedule ahead of time. And then we let the hosts schedule their own guests for their given slot.
Yeah, when we're dealing with 6,000 vendors, and they all have a product, at least most of them do, and they're usually there to pitch one or two things. You know, we basically, you know, that's the reason why we're able to go in the time slot spaces we are. Don, you know, a lot of these shows now, you probably, having done this for years, you probably used to take trucks to shows, but the landscape has changed a lot. So, you know, someone that's thinking about doing a show, what's some of the you know, let's talk about number one, if they just want to do audio, what's some of the audio things they should take? And number two, if they're going to do video, whether it be live or recorded, what's some of the gear considerations? And, you know, it goes as wide as possible on this topic, because I really want people to kind of think about the breadth of stuff that they'll need to take to go to a show. So what would you say, you know, let's start with the audio.
Well, to me, the audio is the easiest part, especially today. For me, hands down, it would be the Zoom, at this point, H6. It's just out. You may even have trouble getting it. It's about $400. They make an HN5, but to me, that is just the hands-down best piece of equipment to buy, to use, to rent, whatever. And essentially what that is it's a – I don't have mine here. It's actually in the studio, but it's a handheld – digital, totally digital recorder. It will give you 4 channels. It has built-in mics already enabled inside the unit. They actually stick out. You can adjust them. They're stereo. You can adjust the stereo scoping on it. But more importantly, it's a mixer. It gives you four separate independent channels. And what you can do if you want to start off just with audio is just buy this one device, and literally you can put it on a stick and put it back and forth. You can hand hold it. The ability to bring in external mics, you can bring in two external mics on an XLR, gives you the ability to actually hand a microphone, an XLR microphone, to the talent, if you will, and you can actually use the HN6 or whatever one you're going to use and hold that in your hand. You also have the ability to put in an additional mic, so you can walk around with three, four mics in one small box that gives you extreme high quality digital recording, audio recording, which you can then edit if you so desire on that one little unit. So to me, hands down, that's the best. The battery life is insane. Easily 12 hours on this equipment. And the new one, they're saying, is up to 20 hours. The H6, which I don't have yet, is going to be 20 hours battery life. And they are just the best things going. Now, what we did, I don't want to get too techie, but what we did is we actually put a wireless transmitter on the back of this HN. We just Velcroed it to the back. And it's only a small, like a cigarette pack. And what we were able to do is actually go wireless with this device. So I would definitely check that out. It's made by a company called Zoom. I think it's Zoom USA. You just Google it. But that is just the handiest thing, especially when you go wireless with that, because then you can just hand the mic to someone, and there's no wires between the two of you. It really works well. So that's what I recommend for audio, for me anyway.
And it definitely keeps your size down. That all that stuff will fit in a backpack.
You can clip that to your belt. I mean, it's that small.
Yeah, and it gives you the quality audio that you need. And if you want to go wireless, you can rig it so you can have the wireless input.
Yeah.
Because sometimes cables are a pain, but also at the same time, you don't have to worry about batteries dying when you're wired. Getting into the video portion, you know, when we first started and we walked in, and I think our first camera was one of the early Sony HDVs, and our camera was about this big, and we were walking into a booth. I'm getting feedback again. We're walking into a booth, and we're competing with the... I'm getting feedback bad.
I lost your audio there, Don.
Don, it was you again. We're getting feedback from you. It's something that Skype is pumping. I don't know what's going on. So anyway, long story short, we were competing with cameras that were this big, and they would not, you know, it would almost like we'd, hey, over here. Now the cameras are this big, and the folks that are with the big rigs are still going in with rigs this big, but now we're being treated on an equal basis. Just from, you know, sometimes the bigger cameras got the attention in the old days, but that's not the case anymore. So let's talk about the video side.
Well, the video side is, a lot easier. You know, any of the small Canon cameras are I don't want to say cheap, but they're, you know, for $600, $400 to $600, maybe $1,000 if you want to get fancy, you can get an HD camera, again, that has audio, video. It records it on an SD card. They're small, portable. You definitely want to have a couple battery backups for those. I guarantee you will zip through those power packs like crazy. You may want to consider an auxiliary power supply that will go for, you know, multiple hours. I advise that. But the cameras with the SD cards, you fill them up, you pop out that SD card, you put in another one. It makes the transition and the portability of the media significantly better than the old days of running back and forth with the tape. As we all know, or I think we all know, that you take a box like the Livestream Red Box now, you can actually clip that, because that's the, you know, the size of maybe two. I hate using cigarette case cartons as a yeah. Thank you very much, Todd. Look at the size of that red box. I mean, you can literally Velcro that to the back of your camera or stick it in your pocket. And Todd, in 2 seconds, you click the button and you're on live stream.
That's right. And this one. And this one here.
Literally everything that you need can go into a backpack easily.
Yeah. Now, doing the studio thing is a whole different story. You know, the studio thing has to re. That's when you're getting your Visa card out, because you're going to have to. You're going to have to make some considerations. And I know one of the reasons, Jamie, that you guys don't do very much live is that there's this extortion racket within the trade show business that everything is self-contained and basically owned by a business that their sole job is to get as much money out of you in a 3 or 4 day period as possible. And that, and Vegas at least is, I'm not even going to say their name, but you know, they're a $6,000 bill for me every time just to get bandwidth. Yep. So this is where the sponsor thing, you know, or your pocket has to support being able to go live. Now this year we're going to do some alternative things. We're not going to be held and be extorted to paying that $6,000 this year. We're going to do something different and still be able to go live. Stuff has gotten to the point where we're, you know, we may fall flat on our face. But we're going to do our best to use some alternative connections to stream the media this year. But, you know, when you think about doing a studio, you need some sort of lighting. It can be, and again, it depends on how big your set is. You'd have to decide if you're going to have one or two or three cameras. And then are you going to run that into some sort of a switching device? And the audio path is always going to be the most critical, making sure you get good audio. So, you know, really when you're doing live, it's cameras, lights, and, you know, you have to have a nice little set. So what was your guys' approach, Jamie, to, you know, your events when, you know, cause you're not doing live, you're just doing interviews and shows right there from your small studios. What is your guys' camera rig? How did you guys set up?
Well, initially we were shooting on, tripods, and, you know, had multiple tripods around. And it wasn't until I actually went to the first year I went to CES with you and saw the light rig that you had. It was a grid that had the lights mounted on it. And then I was at the same time at another booth that was broadcasting from CES and saw that they had a grid where they had the cameras drop down from a grid. And you know, the light bulb went off in my head, and I came back and talked to you about it, Todd. And I said, you know what? There's no reason we can't hang the cameras and the lights off of the same grid. And so that's what I ended up putting together for my existing setup right now. It's a 10-foot long kind of truss system that sits on two speaker stands. It's basically a lighting system for a stage band you can get from any kind of audio or, a guitar center or something like that. But what I've done is I hang three lights on it that provide lighting, LED lights that are daylight capable LED lights. And then I also have a drop down mount that I created that I put little Canon R300 cameras on. They don't make the R300s anymore, but whatever their least expensive camera, it just had to have an HDMI output on it that I could use. And I just dropped those little cameras down, white balanced them for the set with the lights that I had. And they put out a great HD signal. One of the things I learned a long time ago was that a less expensive camera could be made to look a little bit better if you had some lighting to go with it. And so we spent a little bit more energy on lighting and didn't have to spend as much on cameras. So for, you know, a $250, $300 camera, we have five of them now. And we have four guests typically. So each guest gets their own camera close up. And then we have a fifth camera that is the wide shot. And that's what we use. We decided not to do live, Todd, simply because we weren't getting, I think our audience is such a niche audience. We just weren't getting the live traffic to justify spending the exorbitant amount of money for the internet connection in these venues. And like you said, it's a racket. And so we stopped doing live.
Yeah. And I think too, from our perspective is that we know where the money's at. The money for us is, it's for our, at least for our sponsors is, you know, the live is important. Don't get me wrong. We want to be live and having that full production value, but we also know that the post-produced stuff is, as valuable or more valuable because it's out on the net forever than the, you know, the live, which is going on during the show. You know, I think for my, you know, and when we went to, and did live the first year, we really, it was by the seat of the pants learning as we go. Now we're lucky that, you know, the team members had had some experience, you know, doing live, and we weren't, you know, the guys that were on were not camera shy. So that's another thing too, is, you know, you learn by doing, you hone your interviewing techniques. You start getting an internal clock that knows when your guest needs to get off or things are getting boring. And you know, try to, because boy, you every once in a while, you're going to get a guest that you just almost have to kind of prod them along to get the content yep. out of them. But, you know, that just comes with any type of production. You know, I think though, when it, for me, and I should have said this in the beginning, for me, these shows are, content aside, is about making the connections. Yep. It's kind of a way to also stay abreast of where the industry is and where they think it's going. It's gives me the ability to provide feedback to my audience on what I think is going to be great, what's going to be a flop, to kind of head them off at the pass if they've been sold some sort of a marketing deal. Most people, I don't think, realize that when there's big shows like this, the major, even the major techie sites, they oftentimes take the press releases and they will regurgitate them almost in full. Matter of fact, the media companies are getting smart and they say, hey, we'll give this to you, this write-up in a blog post format. And they don't even have to do any work. They just cut and paste it in, which I feel is almost criminal, because they're really not, all they're really doing is being a marketing arm. So we try in these events to, while we may not talk smack about someone during an interview, after the interview, we may have a, you know, a little discussion about the product and, you know, add some, you know, our raised eyebrows or whatever it may be. And I think the audience too, just by watching, will oftentimes get the, they'll understand. They'll say that was junk. And we don't like bringing junk on the show, but oftentimes, how many products have you guys bought that end up, you thought was going to be cool, end up being a piece of junk? I think we've all done that a few times.
That reminds me of, I think it was 2 years ago, we were, I think you and I were on the air at CES, and someone, I forget what it was, but they were showing us how this thing worked, and I said, well, let me take a look at it, and he pushed it over to me, and I went to adjust the volume control, and it fell off, and the guy looked at me and goes, what are you doing? He goes, it's a prototype. He didn't tell us that when he came on. It was just this box with lights and controls on it. There's nothing inside of it, so... You got to be careful. You just don't know. I mean, I had no clue, and I turned it, and the knob came right off. So, you know, when you're doing live, these things happen.
And, you know, it's fun because, you know, a lot of vaporware. You know, there's been a lot of products that we've interviewed that never made market. You know, they're at the show, and they're excited about it, and they did it, and they're like, okay, when's this going to be? Third quarter of this year. You're like, oh, okay. This thing, you know, and like you said, it's just an empty shell. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors at trade shows.
Well, what's the percentage? Wasn't it like 80% of the things that you see at CES don't make it to market or something like that? I don't remember the exact number.
Yeah, it's pretty high. And if it doesn't physically work at the show, you know, or they won't let you come behind it. Like they have this, you know, don't touch the product. Usually if they don't let you touch the product, it's probably a plastic prototype that's been printed or something. But, some of the prototypes look pretty convincing. They do a good job at to making fakes, but,
you know, then you get the bait and the switch. Do you think they're going to come up with one product and you're waiting to see that? And all of a sudden they come up with something like, what is this? Where'd this come from? And it's tough. You know, you're trying to be polite, but on the other hand, that's not what the agreement was in your life.
Right. And we don't necessarily have like this big agreement with folks, but we said, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to show us? And, you know, because we basically have a sheet of paper in front of us that's got all the details from their application. And so it can be a little bit aggravating at times. And in trying to filter out the guys, I think this year what we'll do is if any company applies that makes a iPhone case or something like that, if that's even in their product inventory, we will like, no, thank you. And I think Don just probably lost me again from the, something's going on with Skype.
Okay, well, I'm afraid to adjust my preferences, but I will attempt to do that now.
it seems like it's only once in a while. It's like every 15 minutes.
I don't know. Maybe put some earbuds or a headphone on, because that way it'll isolate the speakers. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw what.
That's a good idea.
We had a gal recently.
Let me do that.
We had a gal recently that was on. It was doing the same thing, and I don't think I don't think it was the earbuds, but it's okay. It hasn't been too annoying yet.
Well, you know, Todd, that vaporware thing happens in the medical conferences too. You know, they come in and tell you about this great new thing they got coming on, and they don't get FDA clearance, and we never see them again. So it's not just isolated to the tech conferences. It happens in the medical space too. You know, I think people are excited about it, you know, their new idea, their new product, and they've got a prototype or they've got a version that they're looking at. But, you know, especially in a regulated environment like I work in, it's, you know, it can be something completely different.
The coming back here, you know, I think too is what you have to also understand is sometimes you just have to grin and bear it when it comes to an interview and get through it and say thank you very much and then move on. Because you get that when you're dealing with the large volume that we do, you know, you're going to. And I muted Don there for a second. We'll see if that causes things to quiet down. Whatever it is, Don, it's worse. Yeah, so I got you muted here for a second, Don, while you work on it. So, Jamie, let's just talk just a little bit then. Give me your typical, you know, workflow from, you know, if you real quickly because it's really when you get done with the show, that's when the real work begins, right? So talk about your process that you use for your production and everything.
Yeah, Todd, I didn't hear the end of that question. You said something about my typical workflow.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what you were talking about.
Just tell me about how your workflow works, how you go through everything from the time let's just start from the interview.
We get to the conference a couple days ahead of time, and we get set up. We always do a pre-show at the conference so that we can work on developing a way to, I guess, from our standpoint, make sure everything works. And we always turn that pre-show into an episode that we try to turn around pretty quickly so that it goes out for the conference, during the conference. So even though we're not live, we do try to turn around several episodes during the course of the conference event itself by editing in the evenings and stuff. And that's what we've done is our primary workflow. And I even do this when I go to CES with you, Todd, is I record during the day and then I'm up very late editing in the short segments. So with the goal that I'm going to post one or two of them while I'm sleeping, you know, upload them to the shows, to my website, so that they can be posted the next morning. The goal being that I'm putting out content, even though it's not live all the time, it is content pumping from the show during the course of the show. And that's probably one of the most important things about our workflow. We have a producer in the studio that does what, you know, basically they do in your set. You've met Anne. She's our executive producer. She comes in and basically vets everybody and introduces them, calms their nerves a little bit if they're nervous about getting on, and gives us the ability to go ahead and have a person that's somewhat relaxed when they do get onto the show and sit and talk with us. But then it comes down to just an interviewer being accomplished at doing what they do. And that comes with practice, as you said. Some people have a better camera presence than others. And some people are getting better all the time. So we just give each individual host their opportunity to do their show. Then after the fact is when the real work happens. In fact, I just got back from a conference at the middle of September. And I'm still editing video from that conference. I should be finished up by the end of this weekend. But, you know, we got to pump all that video out and release it onto the ProMed Network so that it goes out on our Roku channel. The stuff that goes out on my channels on the MedicCast and the nursing show and goes out to the different programs so that they can put them on their sites. So there's a lot of work that goes on after the fact that, you know, a lot of even the people that attend the conferences that are, you know, helping out to run the booth don't really see what happens on the back end to make sure that all this content actually gets released.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize, too, the amount of work that happens post-show. It's pretty incredible. The blog post alone take, you know, a massive number of hours to write and get the research and the links and, the, you know, all the stuff that makes a good blog post to get that done. Don, I don't know what's going on with your Skype, but we're still getting, it's almost like it's overdriven now from you. I'm getting a lot of background noise. I don't know if which mic is actually picking up that. Whatever you just did helped a lot.
Okay, how's that? I just turned off something.
Yeah, that was a big change. That was okay. A big positive change.
It's an auxiliary fan I have underneath my my server here to keep things cool.
Ah, so that it just that white noise alone was enough to pick stuff up.
That's what it was.
Yeah. So let's see where I'm at on this whole process.
You know, not to interrupt, go ahead. But I think it's important to note. The amount of different skill sets one needs if they're going to get into this business. You know, you've got to be a good interviewer. You've got to have a presence. And when you start to talk about the technical aspects, you know, you need a microphone, you need a camera, but you need the lights. You also have to be able to do video editing, audio editing. You have to know about compression, codecs. So there's a lot of skill sets that one person, a one-man shop, really needs to hone in on if you're going to be successful, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of man hours that are involved with this. It's just not putting the mic and the camera in front of someone and capturing that interview. That's the easiest part. The prep before that, getting the proper equipment, but the hours it takes to actually get this this media in a form where it's consumable, where someone could sit and watch it. That's a lot of time and a lot of effort. Then you've got the web, you've got the distribution of that. There's a lot of things that are involved in this. It's not that I want to say it's overwhelming, but there's a lot of variables and a lot of things you need to consider and pre-plan out.
Yep.
You know, and I think for us, you know, because we've been doing it so long, we've kind of got those processes in place and we understand where things are going to go. When I tell someone, well, we're going to distribute on the Boxy, Roku, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV, Chromecast. Yeah. You're going to get this on all glass. You're going to be able to get it in iTunes. You're going to be able to get it in all these different locations. From a distribution standpoint, once it's published, is great. The live stuff obviously is fun. It is what it is, and you know, it when you're live, you just like this show. You never know what's going to happen. But you know, you have to take. There was one hour last year that something happened and the audio on the master video track was completely destroyed. It was just like this whole hour but the video was perfect. Now, if we had not had, and I'll show you this little recorder running off in the side, doing a master copy of the, and actually it wasn't this one. It was one like this. If we hadn't had that, that whole hour would have been lost.
Well, let me reverse the question. What you know, you've been doing this for a long time, probably more than anybody. What do you feel is your most difficult challenge, if you will? Maybe not difficult is the proper word, but you know, where do you see the most time in your area? You know, that consumes most of your time in a massive production like that.
Well, there's three segments. There's three things that consume a lot of my time. The pre-show is the booking. The booking is absorbs, yeah, I probably absorb 40 hours of time just booking the guest pre-show. I mean, that's 40 man hours. That's real time email scheduling and everything else. So that's probably the biggest. And again, but we're booking 50 guests, 50, 60 guests. So, you know, it's in fact more than that. How many did we book last year? Over 100. So, you know, it was, that was the, you know, a big part of my pre-show time. Now during the show, just making sure that, you know, I seem to stress out the most during setup. That's the time I have the biggest, you know, biggest trouble is during the setup. So I've tried, because I know it's my most challenging time, I've tried to ease that process. But once I get set up, I start to breathe a little easier. Doing the actual content, recording and making it around, that's just a thing. That's the fun part. That's the payoff, right? And then
right.
And then at the end, when we wrap up, the wrap up is its own, you know, making sure stuff gets in the right box, nothing gets lost or stolen, because you got 100,000 people walking by you as you're breaking down. But the true, you know, my probably the time that I spend the most time on, and I'm lucky, I'm able to pay bloggers to blog, but I spend probably another 40, 80 hours really? editing, you know.
Editing
all the content, and it might not be that much because I'll do it in spurts. I'll sit down one day and do Monday. I'll work a whole day and do a whole show.
You know, do you use Premiere or do you use a Mac
I use Premiere and a Mac. Okay. And the reason I use Premiere is that I can cue the encoding. You know, I can cue it all, and you can do that with Final Cut, but since the change to Final Cut, my production, I don't have as much use for Final Cut anymore. But for me, Premiere, and I can set the presets of what I want for the video encoding, and it's just me, it's cut, paste, cut, paste, cut, paste, and I have templates set up. The templates are set up so I just drop the segments into the template, kind of readjust everything, and push it off. A lot of guys spend a lot of extra time editing. Ins and outs and drop and compress. So it's not,
well,
as
you know,
bad.
You got to make a decision. It's going to get out. And you know, if I'm going to spend 10 hours on this one piece, or I'm going to spend a half right. hour on this piece. I mean, you always can make it better. I'm curious, Jamie, you find that same thing? Are those the three elements that are the toughest for you? I'm just curious, you know, it's interesting yeah. to get a, you know, juxtaposition here.
Yeah, it is. It's the aggravation of the setup, making sure, you know, everything got shipped to where it was supposed to be, that you remembered all the cables and all the boxes. So I'm with Todd. In fact, it's I remember commenting to Sherry, Todd's mom, last year at CES while we were getting set up, and Todd was anxious about something, and I just looked at her and I said, I am so glad this is not my show, because this is usually me at my conferences. So it was a completely different thing to be one of the assistants rather than the person who everything was riding on. But then yeah, the editing, and I use Final Cut and I cue things up in Compressor, and I very much have a template system where I drop the things in, I fix the in and out points, I you know, put in a couple of lower thirds, and then that's it. You know, that's how it is. It's one of the reasons I switch live multi-camera on location, so that all that editing is done ahead of time when it goes into the can. And very, very rarely do I have to go and pull an individual camera's recording to fix something. I haven't had to do it for the last, knock on wood, for the last two conferences. The switching's been fine. But yeah, it's even having a template and even having a system set up for doing it, that end product editing to make sure that all the content gets out so that you're meeting the responsibilities you set up with your sponsors, is done. That's one of the biggest headaches.
You know, and I
so think- editing is one of the biggest bottlenecks.
It really is. And that's partly because it's just so time consuming. Yeah. Even when you have a template set up for it, and you know this, Don, and it is, even audio editing can be time consuming when you're trying to fix something, get rid of a hum or do something. You know, any kind of editing is just, it's a function of, if you've got a half hour interview, your editing time is going to be a multiple of that total time. And audio editing, it might be two times that time, so you're spending an hour on it. Video editing, it might end up being three or four times or more of the total end time of the product.
It depends.
And when you add that up to doing 15, 16, 17 hours of programming, it can turn into a lot of hours.
It depends on how anal you get on the editing. When we're doing 40 hours, we don't get very anal on the editing. I make sure, you know, the biggest challenge for me is, did we get a lower third in? Okay, if we did, great. I don't have, was the lower third correct? Because I had a couple last year that weren't correct, and that's really hard to overcome, is when the lower third is not correct. And then just, you know, making sure that we've got, you know, everything spelled right. And because, you know, you spell something wrong and you get a name of the company or the name of the guest wrong, or it really looks bad on you, and it can be negatively impacting a follow on year. So from our perspective, you know, that the end product really is where we get the 30, 35, 40 million views. That's, you know, that's because, you know, the Engadgets and the Gizmodos of the world, they're there with 30 people, and their content's been out. They're on to the next event already. And you're 4 weeks, you know, after the show and still pushing out stuff from CES. There has to be a differentiating factor, and our factor that we, and really kind of, and this is, I hate to say it, is our secret sauce, is the ability to have good enough information in the metadata that we still are in the top three or four in the search results on Google, and then making sure that the vendor puts the video on their page. That's been a huge part of our success, is saying, hey, vendor, here's the video. Go put it on your website. Once they put it on their website, it's that cross-linking that they do from them to you really is, yep, from an SEO standpoint, is really incredible, because number one, they're going to watch it on their site, or they may come and watch a couple more on yours.
And you can't say enough about that metadata, Todd. I mean, it is really the most important thing, is writing a good blog post to go along with your content when you post it. You've got to have links to the company, links to the information in there, and you've got to have those important keywords that are going to make it show up when it's searched for. And you're right. When you go and search for some of the key conferences I've covered over the last year, if you search for the name of their conference, my videos come up very high,
right,
in the search engine, and that shows up. They like that because it's video from their conference, and it makes them look good.
And one thing too is these vaporware products. You've done an interview on a vaporware product, and when the product hits the market 6 months later, and people are searching on that, they find your videos. So something I want to cover that I think is important that we probably never ever talked about, but it's rules. And I have rules for the show, and there's a couple of big ones. Don, can you think of one of my major rules I have when we go to a show?
I could think of a couple major rules. One of the major rules is you don't ask for product.
Right. Number one, never ask for product. If they offer product, it's fine, but you never ask for product. Now, you can say, I'd love to, if it's possible, after the show, not today, after the show, if you have review units, we'd love to review it. That's fine. But actually to say, give me some product, because everyone there is trying to get something for free, and we don't ever want to come across as wanting to get something for free. It's cool when they, yep, give us stuff, and I, you know, everyone comes home with a certain amount of swag, and we don't mind that, but because it makes you look unprofessional if you ask. Because I see a lot of professional reporters, first thing they ask for you is, can I get a whatever you have and take with me today? And I just think it's tacky.
Yeah, I completely agree, Todd. It comes down to professionalism.
Right.
If you're going to be a journalist and you're going to do this job, the company needs to know you're there because you're interested in the information and the product they have to talk about.
Right.
You're not there to, you know, fill up a second suitcase you brought with you, yep, because you wanted to bring a bunch of stuff home from CES. Right. I mean, any conference, and that happens in medical conferences too, there is swag. There is stuff to bring home, and it's cool to do that and get some of that stuff. But it always needs to be offered,
right,
not asked for.
Yep. And the second rule I have is specifically for evening events, no drinking until you're done interviewing. Yep. So, you know, we all like to, you know, we're working like dogs, and I don't begrudge anyone. We usually miss the shrimp line because the shrimp's gone. So, you know, your last thing you might be able to get is something from the bar as you finish. But we basically, one of our rules is no drinking during the show, no drinking at a post event. And if you're done, if you're not going to put a mic in front of anybody's face anymore, then you can have a cocktail. But besides that, no, you know, and I see so many journalists, first thing they do is run and get a beer, you know, and I'm like, okay, I see what you're here for.
Well, I think the difference, Todd, and maybe Don, you might agree with this, is the difference is those journalists are working for another company, whereas as a podcaster, as an individual content creator, I'm working for myself.
Right.
You know, the value for me to be there is to get the content. I'm not there for the food.
Yeah.
I'm there for the content. And so, you know, but these, you're right. A lot of these other journalists, they just there for the free food. They're going to write an article one way or the other. Maybe they talk to somebody.
Yep.
Maybe they just go by and pick up a brochure from a booth and write their whole article off of the brochure. But, you know, there's the key difference is that the content creators are the people that are in line waiting to get that next interview. And it's the big corporate reporters that are the ones that are standing around in the buffet line and standing at the bar, you know, tooling up for the next drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you another rule that Todd doesn't talk too much about, but it was one of the, oddly enough, it was one of the things that attracted me to Todd's network almost from day one. This is going to sound a little hokey, guys, but I believe it. It's the non-use of any foul language and keeping things family safe. I got to tell you, you know, the some podcasters, to a lot of people, it's like the Wild West. We're, you know, we're not Howard Sterns, and you don't use the F word every 5 seconds, or, you know, just use bad language in general. And a lot of podcasters, and they're famous, they have a big following, just use continually foul language and a lot of sexual innuendo. And boy, I just have like zero patience and tolerance for that, because even though you're not regulated, quote, by the FCC, and you can say what you want on a podcast, I have a real problem with it. And I really firmly believe that it's nice that at least I could say, and I know all, you know, the Tech Podcast Network could say, we're a family safe network. And I think that that's something to be real proud of, and that we have a set of rules that hopefully govern the use of language. And it just makes everybody look professional, and it also allows us to have anybody we want, kids or whoever, watch the program and not worry about, you know, have the parents worry about them hearing things that they shouldn't hear.
And, you know, and just some generals, and thanks, Don, for that. And it's, you know, just some general stuff too. Get a haircut before the show. You know, make sure your shoes are good. You know, I know Jamie, you wear a sports jacket, and you know, you don't overdress. You know, personally, I wear a polo shirt with a logo on it, and you know, some Dockers. But, you know, and we do allow people to wear tennis shoes on the show floor when they're, you know, when they're doing interviews, largely because we're on our feet for 10 hours a day. And it's just, you know, you walk as many miles as we do. You don't want to wear your dress shoes. But, you know, just have a general clean appearance and come to the show shave. You know, it's just basic stuff, you know. And, you know, you hate to put that out as a rule per se. But I think it's, you know, just something that we do just to tell folks, you know, this is what we're expecting from each person that's going to be on the show. You know, and it's, you know, it goes with it. Like, you know, what happens in a production, you know, CBS, NBC, they're going to makeup. You know, they're getting their hair done. They're getting powder put on their face. And we don't do powder here. But you know, we're men's men and ladies, and you know, there's a reason for it. Let's talk just a little bit too. just as a general, this is, you know, if you're going to do a show, let's talk just a little bit about security of your gear. And, you know, what's some of the things that you've had to overcome, Jamie, for security on your gear when you're at a big event like that?
My own fear that something's going to walk. We had some gear walk from our booth while we were in our booth.
Really?
Somebody just walked by, picked up a backpack and kept going, and no one saw him do it. And we only learned about it when somebody found it discarded upside down with everything dumped out of it. And of course the iPad and the iPad mini inside of it were missing. But it was in the men's room and the security guard found it and brought it back to us. So, you know, that you can't be too secure at these conferences. You'd like to think nobody's going to steal your stuff, but you got to keep things out of sight. You got to keep things out of the way. And then at the end of the day, my cameras go home with me.
Right.
And even at Todd's conference, you know, I not that I don't trust Todd.
Yep.
And I, you know, but I put my cameras back in my case and my cameras went home with me. And I brought them back the next morning and set them back up so that Todd had use of them. They're my cameras and I'm responsible for them. And they're going home with me every night because that's how I know that they're safe and secure.
We have, when we were in the convention hall, we didn't have to hire security. We had quite the elaborate security setup. And I won't go into our details on how we secured stuff because I think that's not something I want to talk about on the air. But I will say that if you're going to go to a show, you should put some considerable thought into security and figuring out how you're going to make sure that your gear is not going to leave either post show or during the show. And we have had some of the same similar. You know, the briefing we give everyone, you know, I trust everyone, but everyone's a thief. And I want to make sure that we don't lose anything at the same time. So that's past year. We had to hire security. We had to actually have a physical security agent in the booth during non-show hours because of our location, because we were literally 10 feet from an entrance door, and someone could have very easily grabbed something and walked out with it. But I think don't you think if someone would have tried to have stole something last year, even if we wouldn't have had a security guard, they would have probably had their hands full, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, the barbed wire helped a lot. That was a good deterrent.
Yeah, the Constantine wire and...
And, you know, we don't really tell people that we have it electrified, so not only are you going to get cut to shreds, you're going to get electrocuted.
But, you know,
Todd, not only at the conference, but in the hotel room.
Right.
I mean, when I go to the conference, that do not disturb sign goes on the outside of my door and nobody cleans my room. If I need fresh towels, I go find the maid and get them myself.
Well,
And that doesn't always keep them from coming into your room, but it's I put things away. I hide things in my drawers underneath my clothes. And then I also put the do not disturb sign on the door so that they're not supposed to come in and clean the room because right. You know, if you lose that one thing you need to do the conference, you're done.
Yeah. You know, and one thing too is the way I look at it too is, you know, and believe me, for those of you that are just thinking about doing this for the first time, you don't have to meet this standard, but I got $50,000-$60,000 worth of gear sitting on the floor. You know, literally, it's the real replacement dollars. And I'm probably even understating that a little bit. So, you know, you get, when it's those types of dollars, you know, we have insurance, but, you know, go ahead and try, have a $7,000 camera stolen and then, you know, go work that through your insurance company for the next 3 months. You know, it won't be pretty because, you know, you're going to be lucky if you get paid for it. And, most of your insurance is to, you know, protect you if someone trips and falls and hits their head in your booth or something. And that is something you have to have too, most shows require to have some sort of liability insurance. It's relatively inexpensive, but, Raw Voice has a general policy that covers us for trade shows.
you know, you have to protect your gear, not only because you don't want to replace it, but, you know, there's certain things if people take, you can't do the production.
Right.
And, you know, that's a problem, too. I mean, I remember when we first, not last year, but the year before last, when we were setting up, I think, for CES, and I noticed we were backing to the escalator. Not only were we at the front door, but I was just looking as people came down the escalator, your hand could just about reach over. And right. I said, oh, there goes the camera.
Right. You know, and you know, the security extends to going to FedEx. You know, we were unloading at FedEx, and these characters have learned after these shows, it's mayhem at FedEx. All these vehicles and the cars will be there unloading. You know, so I'll leave the tailgate open for 30 seconds as I walk a box in. All they need is 15 seconds, and you've lost another box. And we learned that through almost, you know, we were trusting that we could walk in and walk out. So we always leave a person at the car. No one ever leaves a van. There, you know, there's always someone there controlling the source material as we're putting stuff into the FedEx building. So, you know, so it really, and you just hate to say it, but the vultures come out at these shows and they're looking to scarf stuff up, and the booths are always reporting stuff stolen, at these events. And, you know, and you, like you said, they lose a couple of key items and their show's ruined.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, the intrinsic value for me, and I think this is the most important thing, this is where the money hits the road, is I call the shows that I do, it's a gift that keeps on giving. 3 years ago, we were running an event where basically each interview we did, we assigned a basically like a hashtag. We said, if you want more information on this particular product, go to this such and such website, enter this hashtag, and put your information in, we'll get you more information. I still get people going to that website and asking for more information on interviews we did 3 years ago. So this is content that is, if you don't, my personal show is not evergreen at all. But I find the content that I do with these shows gives me an evergreen element that is really, really important. So not only from getting my name and meeting these contacts, it also gets the show exposure year after year after year. It's a gift that keeps on giving. And I think that's probably, and I have always said, and some people cringe when I say this, but I would go do CES for free without a sponsor, just because of the value that it gives me. Now our costs have risen considerably, and that's not as easy to say anymore. Because I know I'm going to, you know, it's a $20,000 bill before it's all over to cover CES. So it's not necessarily expensive. But Jamie, you don't incur anywhere near those types of costs, do you? What would you say?
The last conference I did was just under $15,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was what my out of pocket cost was. Now I do cover hotel room for a core group of about four people. So hotel room and travel expense was included in that.
Right.
But you know, even if you look at the booth expense and the ridiculous internet cost, because I had to, this particular conference wanted me to provide Wi-Fi for the people around our booth.
Wow.
That was part of the deal. But yeah, it was about $10,000 in costs, not counting the travel expenses.
Right.
It's not cheap.
No.
But it can be done, cheap. And then we come back to that, you know, that the first couple of years we did this, we were just roaming the floor with an audio recorder.
Yep.
And so that can be done, where really your biggest expense is your travel expense.
Right. And you can cover the show as effective. And I'm gonna be honest with you, what we really love about having the studio, it's a place you can come back and sit down.
Yes.
And, you know, recharge, plug into a charger. You don't have to go back to the hotel. You know, for us, there's a lot of value in having a base of operations, I guess, for a better word.
And there's good camaraderie there. I mean, yeah. I didn't know Don before we went until I went to CES the first time. I mean, you get to meet some of these people and that you maybe only know on Twitter or only because you listen to or watch their shows. And so I think that it's good to have that home base. And we got a lot, I'll tell you, at CES last year, Todd, a lot of people saw our booth and knew where the Tech Podcast booth was.
Right.
Because we would be out along, you know, we would be out on the show floor somewhere and say, yeah, well, we're with Tech Podcast. We're right there by the escalators. Oh, that's you guys. That booth looks awesome. You know, so that's one of the reasons you kind of build it up and start doing these bigger projects and start making it bigger. And it can be something you do a little bit each year. I always tell people I bring something new to the conference every time I do a new conference. It might be a new camera. It might be a new banner. It might be a new something. But I try to reinvest and make it a little bit better each time.
You know, it was true. Our location was just incredible.
Yeah.
From an exposure standpoint, there was we got 100,000 people that walked by the booth. You know, we didn't have a something like what was the big one that was down the Verge? Who was those? Or was it Engadget? Or who
they had? It was CNET, wasn't it?
Well, CNET was upstairs, but and they had a million.
Revision 3.
Yeah. It wasn't Revision 3. No. Anyway, they had a $1 million booth. They had union people there that were running the cameras. So we're small enough yet, but we were had great exposure. You know, people could get up close. They could get up, if they wanted to, they could reach into the booth and touch the guest. It's not like we had a big velvet rope or something. It was, we had minimal barriers up and people can get up pretty close to us and watch. And we provided a live video output where they could see what was happening with the show from what was actually going out live. So, it's really cool. It really kind of, while you're there, you get a little bit of an ego boost because you're like, man, we're doing something really cool. And it is a lot of fun. And as tired as I am after every show saying, man, maybe last year was the last year. I think I get untired about July or August.
You know, one thing you didn't talk about, Todd, and I know we're running late on time, but one thing I try to do after every conference is I send out an email and I ask three questions. I ask them to tell me the five things we did a really good job at. I ask them to tell me the five things that we needed to do a better job at, and ask them one thing that they'd like to see us do next year. And that's for each of my podcasters, each member of our team. Because that after action debriefing is how we get better, how we fix problems, how we solve scheduling issues is finding out what everybody's experience was like.
Yep.
And you do the same thing.
Yeah. And we didn't do as much last year. We probably should have. I think last year everyone went home and got sick. Yeah, it was.
I did. I caught the conference crud.
It was horrible. I was dying there for a while.
I was pumping you lozenges while you were there. I don't know. Zicam. I can't remember what I gave you.
Yeah. So this I'm going to get my flu. I'm going to try to get the multi-layered flu shot or nasal thing. And I'm going to, that's another thing too. You know, vitamins and everything pre-show and airborne, just use everything you can to stay healthy before the show, because it's crud city there. And shaking 1,000 hands, keep your hands off your nose and mouth. But
I think Jamie should come up with a list of things that we all need to do prior, to about a month and a half before CES. Cause Jamie, if anybody could do that, that's right up your alley. What we should do to, preventative maintenance to stay healthy.
Well, and that's the nurse in me coming out, but it's the number one thing is get your flu shot. If you're going to a conference in the fall or winter time, it's flu season and you need to get your flu shot. Even if you get the flu, you will get a less serious version of the flu. And then carry hand sanitizer with you in your bag and use it liberally. There have been times where I've, shaken somebody's hand and had it gotten it out and then said, hey, would you like some?
Yeah.
Because I don't, you don't know where my hands have been. and we both kind of laugh about it, but it's something as simple as washing your hands frequently and just staying hydrated. Those are the three things. Flu shots, keep your hands clean, and staying hydrated. And that helps keep you healthy at conferences.
And you can do everything in the world, but at some point you may not be able to. And we used to have a doctor that went with us, when Andy Brown was going. Yep. And Andy would be like, okay, he looks, he'd be watching the entire crew and be like, okay, you need to, he'd write you a script or something. But was crazy. It was nice to have Andy Brown back with us on the crew again, have a doctor on staff. Of course, you know, we got you, Jamie, so you're just as good as a doctor anyway. So that's
I try to keep everybody healthy and at least give you some feel better advice, if nothing else. But, yeah, you know, there's nothing you can do. I mean, a lot of this stuff's airborne. And you know, when you're in a, I mean, how many 100,000 people do they have coming to CES?
150 or 160, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, and they're coming from all over the world. So they're bringing stuff that you've never been exposed to. Yep. So you're more likely to catch it because of that.
We need to wear masks.
You know, we could be wearing masks because that kind of defeats the point of the video. So, you know, you've got to take calculated risk, I guess.
But, all right, well, we are definitely out of time. You know, I should have done this earlier. For those of you that want to check Jamie's show out, make sure you go, and let's see if I can put this up. Make sure you go over to medicast.com. Of course, you can follow Jamie on Twitter at PodMedic. And promednetwork.com is where you can find his network of shows. Matter of fact, right there on that, does that blow up? Nope, that gives you an idea of their studio. Let's get a little of some shots there of that. So definitely get over and check that out. And definitely come over to Geek News Central. Actually, just go to thegadgetprofessor.com. It'll take you here to the Gadget Professor section at GNC. And Don, I must say, you're doing much better with your show notes. You've eliminated the bold and extra spacing, so I think your show notes are looking great, Don, by the way.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And the links even work most of the time.
Well, that's good. That's it's key. So definitely check the Gadget Professor out. And your last show was a pretty good one. A lot of fun. You have a lot of fun with your show, don't you?
Well, I enjoy it, and we get some crazy responses. And, you know, I'll tell you something. Not that it's related, but it's just interesting to me. I am astonished at how many handicapped people watch my show. There's not a week that goes by that I get a letter saying, I'm handicapped, and you mentioned this device, and it's really helped me. And I just feel so good about that. And I have a large audience of people who are disabled, and I'm very proud of that. And it gives me a lot of pleasure to, you know, in some small way to either entertain them, make them chuckle, and give them some tech info. So it's a lot of fun.
Jamie, so what's been new in your show? What you been doing lately?
Well, I'm bringing out a lot of stuff from EMS World Expo. That was the last conference we were at. And one of the latest things I'm doing, because the show I have on Tech Podcast Network is Health Tech Weekly, and that's at htweekly.com. And I just recently recorded an episode that'll be coming out in a week or so that's going to be talking about a new bionic leg that the Army actually has been funding that will be controlled by the person's thoughts. It's actually going to be connecting right to their neural input there. So that's coming up soon. And of course, there's my site, and I appreciate that, Todd. But Health Tech Weekly is the show I have on the Tech Podcast Network that I cover all the health tech at CES. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to be there this year. I'm already looking forward to it.
There's a shift. We've seen that section. Of course, the boomers are driving this huge shift of content towards, we all want our gadgets, so everything's going to be gadget based or tied to the iPhone or however it may be. That area is just simply exploding. So I'm sure you guys are going to have your hands full and covering all that, and be a lot of great interviews. You know,
yeah, we're going to need 2 days to cover it this year. Wow. I'm pretty sure.
You know, one thing I thought was just fascinating, and I'll never forget this. It was probably 3 years ago, maybe four, at CES, where they introduced the 3D printer, which I thought was kind of neat, kind of fun, kind of amazing, and that's about it. You know, I really liked it. It was cool, but I didn't have the vision to realize that, 3 or 4 years later, they're going to make human body parts. And Jamie, I think you probably know this, that they just made a human ear, and this person was able to hear for the first time in their life through a 3D printer prototype, if you will, of making the human ear. And boy, that just sends chills up and down your spine, and it's just fantastic to be able to watch this stuff from its embryonic stages come into a situation where they're actually able to make a human body part. And that was introduced at CES, that 3D printer. Who would have thought that?
It's amazing how this stuff crosses over to different marketplaces. And you're absolutely right. I think the advent of the 3D printer and its use in healthcare is going to change the way people deal with organ transplants. Yeah. I mean, the time is fast approaching, maybe within the next 10 years, that people are going to, you need a new kidney. They're going to put you on dialysis and grow you a new kidney using a 3D printer that's going to print you a kidney that is made from your own cells. You're not going to reject it. You're not going to have to go on any of those drugs. And they're going to just put you a new kidney in.
You know, I this is exciting to me. You know, you think about, I had an uncle who was on, an older uncle who was on it was my wife's uncle, but still uncle. He was on dialysis for years. And he was, one of these folks that because of his, he had drank, he had smoked, he had all these pre-existing conditions that put him much lower on the transplant list, and he waited a long time and finally got a transplant. People that need livers, people that, all mm-hmm. this stuff, I truly believe, I'm be 50 next year, and I'm hoping by the time I'm 65 or 70 that if as long as I haven't stroked or heart attacked out at that point, I'm hoping that they've got to the point where you need a new ticker. They just, order you one up.
I actually think that, Todd, you're absolutely right. 10 to 15 years down the road, the technology's going to be there to do that. I confidently believe that. The things are moving so quickly. It's amazing.
And the non-rejection stuff is the best part too, So, as long as you can keep moving in the, you don't have a massive heart attack and die on the spot, you've got a chance to live, but that's also brings up a whole bunch of other ethical issues that we don't want to cover in this show, but, it could, you can't order a new brain. So you may have a bunch of healthy bodies with nothing going on in the, the ticker up here might be disconnected. So anyway, I digress. Maybe by that time they'll be able to like jack us in and download us, and then we can just continue on. All right, guys. Thanks for being here. Rob, my co-host, will be back next week. I think he's working on a guest for us. I'm not sure exactly who he's working on, but I know a lot of you folks are that are content creators out there are watching. Don't forget the Podcast Award nominations are going on right now through October 15th is when nominations close, so make sure you get your audiences ramped up. This show, sadly, Don's show, because he's part of my network, are not eligible to be nominated, so save your nominations for other shows, but we definitely appreciate your thoughts. If you decide you want to nominate us, but we won't be able to be on the list, but I look forward to announcing a slate here of shows that have made the 220 shows that made the slate here soon. But definitely think about supporting us. And Jamie, thank you for being a sponsor over there too. That was fantastic. And we hope we, when the voting period comes in, drive a lot of traffic. It's right now the traffic coming in is pretty good, but when the voting goes, it just goes skyrocket. But, I think that's it, guys. Thanks for being here. And Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And until then, we'll see you next time. Everyone, take care. Aloha.